Today is October 3rd, 2021, and these are working already. And I'm happy to look at you and see that we're back together. It's been a long and happy, but also a sad and difficult break. I don't recall a period with so much death. And my wife and I were involved in triage, simply trying to figure out who we could be Menachem Avil and who we just had to send an email or a message to. The Rebbeinu Shlomo Hu Bila Hamavet LaNetzach. I am happy to say that the break ended on a happy note, because on this past Thursday evening, we had a pidyon haben of our latest great-grandson, so at least there was happiness along with the difficulty and the sadness. I want to dedicate this shiur today to the memory of Ida Nudel. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll talk about Rabbi Pendler of Moshe David, but Ida Nudel died first, and it was a very difficult moment for me, because I mentioned to people Ida Nudel died and they didn't even know who she was. I don't have to go any further than Yosef Mordechai Gachman, my right hand and my left hand. And he was born in Kiev, Ukraine, I believe. What's happening now? I can continue. And he was born in Kiev, Ukraine. And I can only tell you that he also didn't know who Ida Nudel was. So I just want to mention, she was a very unique personality. And I'll explain to you why the mainstream does not know who she was. When I was growing up and I became conscious of the Soviet Jewry affair, and I would say by the 1970s, she was the most famous prisoner of Zion. This little woman, not married, with a big dog, pleading to go to Israel to join her sister, the Friedman family. And she hung up a sign from her terrace in Moscow, let her go to Israel, and of course they sentenced her to exile in Siberia. And this lady captivated the attention of the entire world. She was they called her the mother of the prisoners of Zion. As long as she was in Moscow, she worked around the clock to help anyone, to use contacts she had, get news to the Western world, to get medicines smuggled into the Soviet Union. She was a very unique, fabulous individual. Finally, with the thaw, she came in Aliyah. I still remember when she arrived, the entire country was in a state of euphoria. And she settled in Israel, but she was a lady who never found peace here in the state of Israel, and I'll explain why. She was totally honest. All of you know the Gemara in Sanhedrin, someone who doesn't have children can't be a member of Sanhedrin. And I've often explained to my Talmidim, what does this mean? You don't have children. Many times it's not your fault that you don't have children. Even though they'll never marry, some people marry and they have problems conceiving. I need not tell you what Purim is about. And what's the secret of children? Children force you to make compromises. We grow up with the children. To become parents is not simple. And in Yiddish there's an expression, kleine kinder, kleine tzaris, greise kinder, greise tzaris, and you all know what that means. Child is small, you have little difficulties. Kid howls all night, you don't sleep. Child grows bigger, you have much bigger difficulties. What high school to send them to, what to do about the army, what to do about yeshiva, what to do about college, etc., etc. And in order to raise children, and this is one of the great lessons I learned from my Rebbeim, including the Rav, and most of all the Rav, and from my students, one has to be ready to accept, ready to compromise. Many of the leading Russian refuseniks came to Israel, and some of them became world famous. I don't have to go any further than Yuri Edelstein, than Anatoly Sharansky. Yosef Mendelevich had more trouble because he was a little bit right of center, and compromise was not his cup of tea, but even Rabbi Yosef found his way on the map. Ida Neudel suffered here. She couldn't believe the left wing, policies, the compromises. I mean, what we have lived through, Oslo, Madrid, then Oslo, then Eric Sharon, then Gush Katif. It just beyond comprehension. Olmert still walks the street. The man should be in jail. How many lives he ruined, how many deaths he brought about directly, indirectly, how many billions of dollars he and Sharon cost the state of Israel in defense and war, and oh God, it's beyond comprehension. But we're parents, we have kids, we have grandchildren, great-grandchildren, we learn how to compromise. Ida Neudel never had children, and she suffered. I can tell you this on a personal level. She really suffered here, seeing the left. And I, you know how heavily I was involved. I can tell you more stories. It's not for now. It'll take hours. Not just with Ida Neudel. I remember one of the great leaders of the refusenik community from Leningrad. He came in Aliyah in the mid-80s. And he told me he's sick. I said, why are you sick? He says, there's too much democracy. And he showed me what the newspapers say about Menachem Begin. Menachem Begin was like a god figure to them in Moscow, in Leningrad. And he said, in Russia we had too little democracy, and here you have too much democracy. And there is truth to this. You have to be able to maneuver and understand and go further. I'll also add another postscript where I may be right, I may be wrong, but Ida Neudel never became totally religious. That she was Jewish and Jewish identity, I need not tell you. She fought to be a Jew, to come to Israel, to be, if I can quote Rakefet, to be no different than Golda Meir. If you recall my Shirmer of Moshe Feinstein and Geirut, I mean, who are the famous Jews? Anyone ever heard of a Chveis Rakefet, of mention other Rabbanim, Rav Melamed? I mean, would New York Times ever heard of them? Absolutely not. But Binyamin Netanyahu, all right, everyone heard of him. Did he put on tefillin this morning? All right, I leave it with a question mark. I want to be like Golda Meir. What's wrong? And she never became totally religious. And I think if a person becomes religious and comes back to his people in a total configuration, there is solace and encouragement in that. In other words, it may be I'm overstating the case, but I think one of the major lessons we get when we open a Gemara, when are you allowed to say the Shema? When are you yod say the mitzvah, the oraita at night? And right away, there are three different opinions in the Mishnah. All my life, I've grown up with Abaya and Rava, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, with Shmuel and Rav. So, all right, there are other opinions, and some of you have heard my lectures over the millennium already. You know very well that I have strong opinions, but at the end of the day, I always say there are other opinions out there. And Ida Neudel could never fall back on this. And I felt for her. Here was a great lady. What a giant of courage. She was all of what, 5 foot four? I don't think she was 5 foot five. A giant of courage. And here the frustration, the akmas nefesh, the aggravation. And I can understand what she probably went through with the formation of this new government. So I just want to mention, I recall her fondly. And Yehi Zichra Baruch, Me'inyan L'inyan Ba'oto Inyan, I was contacted by an individual who worked and helped with the whole area of Russian Jewry. He was based in Washington. Today he lives in Israel. and there's a movement underway to encourage the Israeli government to establish a museum of freedom. In other words, we have a museum, the Holocaust theme. I need not tell you, Yad Vashem is one of a kind in the world. With all the museums, it is special. There's a museum of tolerance that has opened in Jerusalem. We need a museum now of what went on in Russia. It has to be with a dual focus. On one hand, look at these Russian Jews who came out of nowhere, total assimilation, and went on to start a movement, particularly after the Six-Day War, where they risked their lives, where they were sent into exile. In an earlier period, Stalin executed them wholesale, and look what they achieved. Ultimately, 2 million Jews at least came back to Jewish identity, and the State of Israel benefited from well over 1.5 million new residents, emigrants, Jews that have come back, Balei Tshuva among them, the rebirth of religion. And this story has to be told. What Chabad has done in Russia, I've encouraged Chabad. How many of the Chabad leaders were exiled, were executed, publicized? The new generation knows nothing. But there's another side to the story. If I can quote the Rav, and I write about this in Washington, we American Jews did nothing to help our brethren, basically. We should have stormed the White House. We should have stormed Congress. We should have stormed the Senate. And instead, the rail lines to Auschwitz were never bombed. And you're all familiar with this, how much has been written, how much is... The Rav said we have to add another al-chet, al-chet she-chatanu lefanecha she-shamanu et kol tzarkat achenu be-irapa ve-lo asinu dai ve-lo asinu maspik. I'm quoting Rebbe, I quote him in my work on the Rav as well. When it came to Russian Jewry, and Malka and I said this many, many times, how could we say no to the Mossad when they asked us to go to Russia? How could we say no? And we endangered ourselves? Absolutely. It was frightening? Absolutely. You don't go through a KGB inquiry and the point of entry and, I can tell you stories for hours, but it's not important now. What is important, this museum should also tell the story of the Jews throughout the world, led by Israel, but all over the world, be it Australia, be it Canada, be it America, even South Africa, so much was done. We rose to the occasion. We accepted the challenge. And now, so many years later, we've reached the point where no one knows who Eden Rudel was. And Mark, this is to answer your question. There are a whole bunch of buttons in front of me that Mark brought in about Russian Jewry. Give me the one with the yellow star. Let me at least show one of them. And these buttons belong in the Museum of Freedom. These buttons belong in the Museum of Freedom. Solidarity Day, April 30th. I have these buttons, by the way, at home. This one says, Russia is not healthy for Jews and other living things. It has a flower on it. And Russia is not healthy. So, all right, that's the Museum of Freedom. That's Eden Rudel. I dedicate this year. All right, now let's get down to more important matters. Not more important, but more sacred matters. Maybe that may be the wrong word, too. But back to Shasim Paiskim. Jack, we spoke about Nechama Leibowitz. Jack sent me her viewpoint on Das Teira. And Jack said that he was enthralled by the fact that she said, what is Das Torah? There's this opinion, that opinion, a third opinion. Who do we follow? With Nechama Leibowitz, I think it goes much deeper. And I plead guilty to being in the same league she is in. We're Lithuanians. She was a Lithuanian. Although she came on Aliyah from Germany, the origins of her family are Lithuania, and the man she married, her uncle, was a Lithuanian Talmud Chacham, and she herself, I need not tell you, was a a first-rate Talmidei Chachama. And I knew Nechama very well. And a Litvak can't accept opinions blindly. This is the way I saw the Rav. This is the way I understood the Rav. I even have news for you. Some of my Mira Rabbeim, who went through Shanghai, deep down, also did not follow blindly. And Jack, if you want a proof, the proof is very simple. Had they followed Das Teira blindly, none of them would have been alive. And I write about that in my new work. You'll see what I have. I have material that's never been published before on the whole Shanghai question and whether to go to with Semple Sugihara or not to go. So I understand Nechama very well. But what I loved about Nechama, which I said to you was classic Nechama, where she says, what, Das Teira? We should say rabbis are like Stalin? Everything they say is Torah Misinai? You understand? They're related to Stalin. God have mercy, related to Lenin. You know what I write about in Washington, that the kindergarten kids were taught to sing, Lenin lived, Lenin lives, Lenin will live forever. No, you can be sure a Meshumita Jew took that from the Piyut of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Hashem Melech, Hashem Molech, Hashem Yimloch Liolim Ve'ed Meya Elef Alfei Revavot Havdalim between HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Stalin Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. But this is what Russia was, and to Nechama Leibowitz, which is mine, and I would say to the Rav to a certain degree, you don't follow blindly. Shas and Paiskim, we have to think, and we're responsible for our own decisions. So that's my take on Das Teira. I have to say I had a lot of nachat, something I said in class, letting off a little steam. Talmidim contacted me that I was zeicher to say word by word what Reb Mordechai Gifter said in the talk about 40 years ago. And the talk is actually on YouTube. Yomo put it on for me. And outside of realizing the voice wasn't mine, I thought it was recorded in class. And what I'm referring to is never say you're an Orthodox Jew. The minute you say that, you give credence to pluralism, conservative reform. Always say, I'm a Jew, period. You want to be a good Jew, there's only one way to be a good Jew, to survive, and that is to observe Naseh v'nishma, Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, Tikkun Olam, I'm a good person, I give charity, I help old people cross the street, that's wonderful. That makes you a good person, absolutely. It's part of being a good Jew as well. But the totality of Jewish experience is the Vah Hashem. Okay, so Baruch Shekivanti L'das Gedolim. Okay, now let's come down. We're dealing with a very basic, important question. I can't believe how the response around the world, we opened up a real fascinating topic here. And my name is Arnold Edward. My brother's name is Leonard Earl. My kid brother is Stephen Douglas. Were my parents permitted to give us these names? And as I told you, a cardiologist, he complained that I made him into a world-class cardiologist. He must be, because all the Gedolim go to him. So he told me when all the great rabbis come to him and they give him his Medicare card, they're different names altogether. Non-Jewish names, total non-Jewish names. And this is the question. Now, the Maram Shik was totally opposed, and I thank many people who wrote to me, and I didn't know this, that the name Shik, you know what Shik was? When they had to take last names in Austro-Hungary, like my family got caught up with the name Reutkopf, Rothkopf, Redhead. So, by the way, that name today is basically knocked out, neutralized. I had only daughters, changed the name to Rakefet. My brother's family already, their name is Odem. If you see Harav David Hillel Odem, you should know that's my nephew. Odem is the play on Rutkoff. Rakefet is an anagram. If you take Rutkoff and take the letters, you come up with Rakefet. But fascinating, the Maram Shik, you know how they got the last name Shik? Shein Yisrael Kodesh. Shin Yud Kaf. So I thank Adam Rosenberg and others who called that to my attention, and there's no question that he was furious with anyone who took a non-Jewish name. On the other hand, you have from Gedolei Rishonim, and the Reb Menashe Klein quotes them, that Maharsham Aleksha and others, that everyone has two names, we live in two worlds. And if you look into the Tshuva, people ask me about last names and what do you do, go in and look into Reb Menashe Klein's Tshuva, you see that he discusses so many different possibilities. Halacha l'maisa, whatever name you have is fine, is good, it was given to you, we'll come back to this. You don't have to be angry at your parents, you don't have to be upset with your parents, but you must also have a Jewish name, a Hebrew name, a Torah name, call it what you wish, and live up to your good Hebrew name. Whatever your last name is, I've noticed people from America, generally speaking, you can always catch a Jewish last name. Rothkopf, Goldstein, Perlmutter, I can go on and on. People from England, I had students, Clark, Smith, in a million years you couldn't guess that they were Jewish until you met them. But this is the world, this is where we live. We live in a dual culture, and we're going to come back to it later today and next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Now, we ended off the class last week by quoting a Tosfot in Gittin, where Tosfot says that Rabbeinu Tam was furious never to use a non-Jewish name in a get. We're quoting Tosfot in Gittin, Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Bet, 34b, and it's the second Tosfot on the page. And Tosfot says, Chalila lahaskir, Rabbeinu Tam says, the greatest of the Balei Tosfot, Chalila lahaskir, shame over kachavim, b'torat Moshe b'Yisrael. And they quote the Rabbeinu Tam, and as I mentioned to you, the hardest problem in a get. And my daughter, who now is, I would say quite famous, she was appointed to the committee to choose the Dayanim and to move Dayanim up to the Beit HaGadol. And I see the phone calls she gets, I shiver, I shake. I recall it was from the Honeymooners, there's one episode where Ralph is writing to the President of the United States. And he's writing to the President, he puts on a suit and a tie, and he's sitting there, but the chilu rechimu, I mean, we would go to mikvah, so I hear who my daughter's talking to, I think I got to run out and put on a jacket and a tie. Wow. So here, she told me time and again, the biggest problem in writing a get is the names. What names do you put in? And we already have a format. We put in the Hebrew name, and we put in the English name and the nicknames, and then we put in even and any nickname and name we left out, it's all included. This is the person, to cover ourselves, to be sure the get will be good. Now, I want to thank Talmid Mank Schatz, who sent me to the Sefer Yashla Rabbeinu Tam, and that's what I want to begin to share about. It's a very important document. Let me say, by way of introduction, the Sefer Yashla Rabbeinu Tam is a difficult sefer to utilize because it was never really finished, it was never really prepared for publication. I believe it was in 1898, we finally have an edited edition from manuscript, and those of you who know what's going on in the graduate schools of Jewish studies, and in Israel it's not only graduate schools of universities, but many machonim, many institutions, fellas who never graduated elementary school, but they've learned how from Shas and Paiskim to deal with Rishonim, Achronim, and we have endless volumes coming out here, critical editions, both by academic scholars and both by Torah scholars. Sefer Yoshua Rabbeinu Tam was put together by someone named Shraga Rosenthal, and I believe it was in 1898, you can check it out. Because it comes from manuscript, because it wasn't edited, at times it's very unclear. You feel you're missing material, you're missing lines. It maybe wasn't written for publication. It's sort of like the Melamed Lahoyel. But I have to tell, and there's a part of it, a tshuvat, it's called, responsa, and a part of it, chidushim. And I have to tell you that this particular reference that Mike Schatz sent to me, I knew this, but I never connected it with the Tosfot. You see, Tosfot doesn't say, look into Sefer Yoshua Rabbeinu Tam. He discusses this in much more detail. Reb Menashe Klein evidently never made the connection. But this particular incident is very clear. It's one of the tshuvot that reads like it was written in modern times. You're not lacking anything. And I'm referring you to Sefer Yoshua Rabbeinu Tam, the division that deals with responsa literature, and it's Siman Chaf Hei and Siman Chaf Vav. And I'll tell you what's very depressing about this source. It was written during the Crusades, and you see how many Jews converted away from Judaism, even from the finest families. It's depressing to see, but this is the reality. And Rabbeinu Tam here, what happened was, and you can recreate it through the tshuva, is that one of these mishumadim got divorced, and in the get, they only wrote his Hebrew name, not the name that he took when he became a guy. Okay? In my case, if I would be this individual, Chas v'Chalila, so they wrote Aaron Yitzchak, but they didn't write Arnold Edward, Hamuchuneh, or the Mitkayer Arnold Edward. They didn't write it. And one of the Balei Tosfot, Rabbeinu Yontif, puzzled the get. There was another problem too, that the Edim only signed on the get after the get was written. Now, you had a dual problem. The second problem is a minor problem, because we paskin lahalacha, Edei Mesira Karte. It's the witnesses to the get being delivered that create the get. The reason we always have Edom on the get is in case you want to check out, was there a divorce? What happened? So you know who to turn to. But their signing on the get is Netikin Olam. It's not basic to the divorce procedure. It's for the sake of being able to run a good, well-established world. But what about the names? And this get was given already. The Meshumad has disappeared. You're not going to get a second get from him. And here, of course, you have a classic example of an aguna, a woman who cannot budge. She is stuck. If she doesn't get a second get, she cannot remarry. And you're dealing here, again, there's so much, I want to be very brief and concise. It's not only an aguna problem. The world is real. It took me a long time to understand this. It's a very great disappointment for me to find out that the world was real. I grew up among Gedolei Torah. I grew up in Bnei Akiva. There was, in my era, so much commitment, so much spirit. What came out of Bnei Akiva, how much we contributed to Israel. I would venture a guess from Bnei Akiva in the Bronx. There are 50,000 people direct descendants living in the state of Israel today. And my brother and I contributed. We have a share in it. But it's overwhelming how many names and how many people in New York and Chicago and Boston and what we built and what we did. Okay, good people. But the average person is far from a total tzaddik, unfortunately. That's why we have Rosh Hashanah, that's why we have Yom Kippur, that's why we have Hilchot Shuvah of the Rambam. So, you know, you leave a young woman that she can't remarry, she can be involved in sexual activity, which is totally, let us say, harmful to your spiritual character and to the state of Judaism where we're at. And this also is a consideration. So when you say you have an aguna, and an aguna, a young woman, you have to do everything in your power to try to help her. And I need not tell you this is a rabbinic tradition. I know a guy named Rakefet wrote a volume called Rakefet Aaron Chelik Gimel. I think it's more than 350 pages on the topic of aguna. And we do everything in our power to help within the halachic context. In other words, we can't come along and say, any woman who doesn't have a get, we declare her marriage retroactively annulled, and she can remarry whoever she wants. That we can't do. But within the halachic context of Shas and Paiskim, response to literature, and Rav Avadya Yosef, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Chatam Sofer, the Noda B'Yehuda, we know what we can do. And Rabbeinu Tam was furious at Rabbeinu Yontef. He said, this is absolutely not the reasons to invalidate the get. This get is absolutely good. And he goes into a whole discourse about the names. And he mentions here so many examples of Mishumadim. It's frightening. Some of them he mentions, he knows who their relatives are. These are people from the finest families of Balei Tosfot, and also converted away the Crusades. And Rabbeinu Tam says, we have endless gittin from these Mishumadim, and we never yet wrote in the get their non-Jewish names. And he talks about Ukishigeresh Rebbe Eliezer Krovai et Moret Rachel Dodokeinu. These are his own relatives. Vahaya Shemo Veshlin Ushema Bilshitz, if I'm pronouncing it right. And they wrote in the get Eliezer Barachel, their Jewish names. And he says, when we're writing a get, we're writing it because of halacha, we're writing it because of Torah. What has to be the determining feature is how we refer to these people. And the Jews always use their Jewish names. The Gentile names, yes, it's a reality. But chas v'chalila lachazkir b'torat Moshe v'Yisrael. And he rebukes Rabbeinu Yontef. And finally, at the end of the tshuva, we see that Rabbeinu Yontef changed his mind, admitted Rabbeinu Tam was right, and he praises him that he had the ability and the courage to change his mind. And these two tshuva, very fascinating, all dealing with the same question, a world of information. You can recreate what went on during the Crusades, and a problem par excellence that Gedolei HaBalei Tosfot had to deal with, and Rabbeinu Tam Barosham. And by the way, out of this tshuva, you see what an academic approach is like. In Yeshiva University, in my time, we had two great lights. One light was Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and the other great beacon of light was Professor Avraham Weiss. Professor Weiss knew Shas by heart. I mean, I knew the man. His children are, two of the three are still alive, one is no longer alive, but the children too were extremely bright, and he knew Shas by heart, but a totally different approach than the Rav. The Rav was Shas and Paiskim, Lithuania, Rav Chaim, Professor Weiss, wrote endless svarim. And I remember he said to, there was a medical doctor in the Bronx who had been a big Talmud Chacham in his youth, and the Weiss family and the Rofko family, he was our doctor, Dr. Bacher, if I'm pronouncing it right, B-A-C-H-E-R, if my memory is correct. And he once said to Dr. Bacher, "You see, all these books I've written, no one can understand them." Why? It was an academic approach. What's academic approach mean? His books, he reorganized the order of the Talmud chronologically. You follow? It's an academic approach. It's different. Now you take this tshuva of Rabbeinu Tam, if you were learning in a Gemara shiur with the Rav, all right, you're learning Tosfot, you deal with it. You deal with it from the point of view of halacha. What's the real name? What isn't the real name? When you deal with that academically, like Mori Urebi's son, his only son, my classmate, Professor Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, Chaim was an expert on taking a tshuva like this and creating a whole world. Who these people were, who they were related to, what time of the Crusades, when did this happen, how many Jews converted, did any come back, what happened to them? Of course, this is an academic approach, and this tshuva is like a pomegranate, like a rimon. It is filled with fabulous information. Look at it carefully, you'll see the Goyesha names. What do these names mean? Where do they come from? Are they German? Are they French? Etc., etc. There's a world that can be explored. But now I want to go one step further and say something very basic, elaborate upon what I said the summer before last when I gave the talk against what's happening in the United States. It's, by the way, it's working to the advantage of the Jewish people and the state of Israel. What you don't realize is, until now, only a few young people would stay in Israel after what they called the gap year. You had to be Avat Mordechai. And these kids integrated. Didami went on to Machon Lev, went on to Bar Ilan, etc. Now a lot more kids don't want to go back. And it's not just Avat Mordechai, it's Sinat Haman. What are they going back to? What's happened in America is mind-boggling on all levels, but as Jews, the anti-Semitism in the public thoroughfare, the self-hating Jews, the New York Times, they'll listen to a class like this, they'll be furious. We're reminding them that they're Jewish, that there's a God, that there's a Torah, that there's a Shabbat, that there's a Kashrut. Oh my God, Rosh Memshalah comes to America and he puts on tefillin before he meets the president. A lot is happening. I don't have to tell you about the rest. And they don't want to go back. So it's working to our advantage. Baruch Hashem, the Ribbono Shel Olam is kind to us. Even in the darkness, there's a lot of light. But there we come. You come in Aliyah. You come to Israel. So here is sitting a Talmud on the screen named Chaim Maltz, Herbie Maltz. And Herbie, I know him since 1962 when I came to my real shtela, the real rabbinate, where I really, I'll talk about it tomorrow, the end of class. You don't know, I was a different person altogether. All I was concerned to bring every, I was like a Chabadnik, to bring every last Jew a little closer to Yiddishkeit. I apologize today, all I'm concerned is I should know Kol HaTorah Kula, etc., etc. Okay. So I met Herbie, he was one of the few from Jews in Essex County, and I knew him as Herbie. Here he's suddenly, he's living here, what, 10, 11 years, he's Chaim. And if I call him Herbie, he gets upset. I have a student in Mechvala many years ago. She married a student of mine. I brought them in Aliyah. Her in-laws, well, mother-in-law was mad at me for a kid from this, you know him, a kid from Queens. Mother-in-law was mad at me, brought them Aliyah. I lived to see the day came. She died, but she was alive. She said, ach, Rav Rakefet, what you did for my children to bring them in Aliyah. Fabulous, I thank you. 30 years earlier, she wasn't so happy. Had the same thing in California. So, but not for now. I can just leave the stories out. Let's come back here. So this girl's name, a very interesting name. She's the only student I ever had whose name was Glenda. And she got upset. Rebbe, it's Zahava. Okay. No? What am I referring to? Open up the Ramban to Pashat Bo. Perik Yud Bet in the Ramban. Pashat Bet. Right towards the end. And the Ramban opens our mind, opens our heart. He deals with the problem. What we benched Rosh Chodesh Shabbos? No, Mark up in Ramat Beit Shemesh, what did they bench? Ma Cheshvan. Show me one Jewish source for the word Cheshvan. Kislev. Tevet. Adar. What are we dealing with? Come on, what do we lack? Yomo. We lack Hebrew? What's going on here? Chodesh Aviv. Chodesh Ziv. Have a great grandson, Ziv. You should see what a beautiful child. I don't know. I think I have the best looking great grandchildren, the smartest. I have one little guy, 3.5 years old. I fainted. He's sitting in my house. He's 3.5 reading Hebrew, reading English. I told his parents, what are you going to do when he goes to school? I think I told you. It's not a joke. You go to school, all right? You got to give him special assignments. School is to learn how to talk to your neighbor. I've had too many bright kids who failed in the world because they were geniuses. School you go for social grace. Learning, it's all on your own. But you got to guide a little kid. Okay. Baruch Hashem. Give Hebrew names. What's wrong here? And the words of the immortal Ramban, Likro Chadashim B'Shem Nikraim Be'eretz Bavel. Lahaskir ki shama madnu umisham ha'elenu Hashem yitbarach. And what a message we have here. When someone says to me, Ani, I'm the happiest, proudest individual in the world. Because when he says to me, Ani, he's saying to me, am I inspired by you? Look where you came from. Look where you grew up. Take a look that even today, at the age of 83, Arnie is all upset because the Yankees are such a bunch of phonies. You follow? Ribbono shel Olam, down to the last day of the year to make the payoffs or not make the payoffs. These are the Yankees. Oh my gosh. Arnie, wow. Look where you came from. And look where you are. Never be ashamed of your name. When you say to Herbie Maltz, you're saying to him, Herbie, look where you came. First of all, Herbie survived Hitler with miracles. A movie was made about it. A book was written about it. The Goya who saved his life is a Hasidat Umat Olam. She saved entire families. I mean, you have no idea. You can't say all Poles are bad. That's what I've said 1,000 times over. They're good people in the world. They may be a minority. They may be few, but they're good people in the world. Herbie, look where you came from. America, Newark, Elizabeth, a business in Williamsburg. Today in Eretz Yisrael, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Wow. Don't only call yourself Chaim. Bow before HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you had the strength, the courage. Lech teich acharai b'midba, b'eretz lo zalua. And go a step further. And I once got stoned for this, so you'll understand in a minute why. No? What do you know, gentlemen? The Chatam Sofer, Drashat Chatam Sofer. His most famous drasha. And the Chatam Sofer, I need not tell you, a giant of giants, his most famous drasha. That we have to observe Yontif Sheni in Eretz Yisrael. Quoting the Rabban, have to know where we came from. Have to pay homage to the Galut, to Hollywood, Florida. This is where we came from. Yontif Sheni, Yontif Sheni. Beautiful, beautiful. Of course, he was saying this tongue-in-cheek because he was fighting the reformers who abolished Yontif Sheni, like the State of Israel just abolished Yontif Sheni last week. The Prime Minister came back on Yontif Sheni. How they whistled an outcry, I don't know. But Mela, Yontif Sheni, we'll talk about it later today. Yontif Sheni. But I said it in Israel, people took me seriously. I'm saying, no, you have to understand, it's a drasha, it's homiletics, it's a message. But it's not a bad idea. We don't have to be ashamed of the Golas. Look where we came from. And I'll let you in on a secret. The truth of the matter is that what the Chatam Sofer said actually became part of our life here, not only part of our life, but everyone, the Haredim, the Datiyim, the Ashkenazim, the Sfadim. Mark, what am I referring to? Hakafet Shniyot. Whoever heard after Shmini Atzeres, Simchas Torah, all in one day here, I got to go out again and dance with a Sefer Torah? I'm busy. I'm taking down my sukkah. I'm sorting out my lulav, what I'm going to keep, throw out, what I'm going to keep, etc., etc. Rebbeinu Shelaylam. They're dancing in Brooklyn. They're dancing in Moscow. They're dancing in Melbourne. They're dancing in Johannesburg. We have to be dancing here as well. And you know who deserves the credit for this? Rabbi Shlomo Goren's father-in-law, Rabbi Yedidya Frankel. He was a Rav, had come in Aliyah, was a Rav in South Tel Aviv. Look him up if you don't know the name. He was a fabulous Rav who united the Sfadim, the Ashkenazim, the Chassidim, the Mitnagdim. A fabulous Rav. I'll tell you a story in a second. And he introduced Hakafet Shniyot during World War II. He said, the Jews can't dance. They're in the concentration camps. We have to dance for them. And from that Hakafet Shniyot, it ultimately spread to all of Israel and all the world. And I'll tell you one story. I apologize, I cry. I can't help it. But beautiful little story. When Rav Lau was already of Shidduch age, they suggested for him Rabbi Frankel's daughter. And lovely girl, good home, wonderful person. But the in-laws were a little bit worried. Where did he see a role model? He had no parents. He was a survivor, right or wrong. And it's very important, the role model, I have to be honest with you. When my daughters were looking around and got engaged, I only checked one facet, one thing, if the parents are happily married. It's the only thing I wanted to know. I didn't care from, not from. I knew the boy. The boy can be at Golan, at Tzaddik. But it doesn't matter what the parents, when it matters if the parents had a good marriage. If they saw compromise, if they saw concern, if they saw gemilat chesed, if they saw hakarat hatov. And Rav Lau, who's very bright, said to his father-in-law to be, his father-in-law asked him, who is your example? Who would you have said, you and your wife are my example? Well, when he answered like that, the shidduch was made on the spot. But isn't this a beautiful thought of Kafet Shniyot, how it began and how it captured the world? And this is the Chatam Sofer, this is the Ramban, and Halacha L'Maisa, whatever your name is, be proud. All right? You take on a Hebrew name. People convert. We always give them a Hebrew name, obviously. But doesn't mean you have to forget your past. Know where you came from. And last summer, I gave a drasha, which I stand on every word. The drasha hit home all over the world. But the heart of my drasha was how different we are than what's going on in the United States. Could you imagine taking down statues of Columbus? Okay, I mean, just think for a minute. Taking down, all right, Robert E. Lee. They were Confederates. It doesn't mean that today we think differently, Baruch Hashem. But
you can't mess with the Italians.
What?
You can't mess with the Italians.
Well, they messed plenty with the Italians. Statues came down. Maybe in New York you can't mess with the mafia in Staten Island. I don't know. But the whole approach, and our approach is totally different. Abadim hayinu leparo. What does the Mishnah say? Potkim b'gnai v'msaimin b'shmach. And this is the Torah approach. This is our understanding. And halacha lemaisa, this is exactly what Reb Menashe Klein Paskin, with all the difficulty, because I tell you again, for me to paskin against the Maram Shik is not difficult. I'm not a Hungarian. For Rav Menashe Klein to paskin against the Maram Shik, Talmid Muvhak of the Chatam Sofer, very, very difficult. The Maram Alekshe, so what does this have to do with Hungary? But he paskin, and this is, I'm adding the Ramban. He doesn't quote the Ramban, but this Ramban is so powerful. And it's one line, one or two lines in the Ramban. But when you start to analyze it, wow. And this was the Chatam Sofer. And I'm not advocating Yom Tov Sheni in Israel, but the thought is beautiful. And the Kibbutz Galyat, we all have to have pride. We don't have to be ashamed. What Ben-Gurion did is hard to forgive. He took the Sephardic world and made them ashamed of where they came from. You know that many Sephardim changed their last names to Weitzman. And when they would ask, why are you changing your last name? Because they check. The only thing they don't check, if you add a hey or a yud to your name, they don't check. But when you're hebridizing your name, they have to know you're not a criminal. So they said, we have to succeed here. And I can tell you, halacha l'maisa, I just saw someone writing about it, but I can tell you, halacha l'maisa, I knew the frumest, finest people in the world who were not yekkes and didn't wear a kippah in public. And I asked, why? I know 52 years ago, I was quite innocent to what Israel is about. I was an Olech Hadash, and when you're an Olech Hadash, you're a greenhorn, a greener, you know, call a spade a spade. All right, it's not America. In America, to be a greenhorn, you suffered. In Israel, everyone was a greenhorn. So I remember I asked this wonderful Jew from a wonderful family, and he was in the government, and I said, how come you don't wear a kippah? And he said to me, I want to get a hat. And that answer I heard afterwards from many other people. They took off the kippah. In the government, in the army, endless examples. And wow, what Ben-Gurion did, your pride, it's not just Ben-Gurion, it was the whole thinking of that era. And in the memoir literature now, it comes out more and more. I just read about Kibbutz Hadati, that the irregular established kibbutzim spat in their face. We're running away from people like you. We don't want to see you. We want to have anything to do with you. And there was that hatred for how they were raised and dedication and surrender to God and Torah. All right, but we good Jews, be proud of our past. My children, my great-grandchildren, believe me, my grandchildren, my own daughters, they do not have any English names. This is a new world today. But we who made the transition, nothing wrong with Arnold, Arnie, Aaron, it all is wonderful. That's you. That's your progression. Lifnei Hashem. Okay. Let's go a step further. Me'inyin l'anyin l'otom inyan. And this is fascinating. It's the next tshuva. It's the continuation. It's in Chelek Dalet. Let me just see the tshuva that we just dealt with in great length. 1 second. Well, I have so much material. 1 second. 1 second. Am I? Here it is. Yeah, the other tshuva was, I'm right, Chelek Dalet, Siman Kuf Yud Dalet. And this one is Siman Kuf Tet Vav. And we've spoke about this last term. It's all part of the same topic, but I'm quoting this tshuva too, because there's new fascinating information here. You'll see. And what's it dealing with? Not just the Goyish name, but he's dealing with Gentile clothing. And we dealt with this. And in relation, it's to the same person asking the question about Arnold, Aaron. He's asking about Malbushe Modern. He has transliteration here. Modern clothes. Are you allowed to wear it? And he also raises the problem that in Europe, all the clothes that the men wore at the bottom, you wore a jacket, it was a rectangle, a square. Am I using the right word? What would it, in other words, not curved. Not the way our suits, our jackets are curved.
Like a right angle.
A right angle. That might be a better word. And he's asking, is this allowed? And of course, everything here goes back to the Maharik. We quoted him many times. I quote him again. I saw published writings dealing with Jew-Gentile, and everyone quotes the Maharik. And it's found, I give you the source again, Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya, Siman, Kuf Ayin Chet Sif Katan Aleph. And again, we have to dress differently and act differently, but something that the Gentiles wear L'shem Pritzut, that we're not allowed to wear. And the example that the Ramah gives, and it comes from the Marik, red clothes. Don't forget this. You'll see why. Red clothes. Right, this is a very interesting question. L'shem Pritzut, red. I don't know. They say a woman catches your eye more if she's in red. I don't know if that's true or not. A woman in blue, a woman in yellow, a woman in green, a woman in orange. I mean, the women's clothes. You ever see men's clothing stores are 1/10 the size of women's stores. Okay, men's shoes. I can't believe what I see at times. Entire stores just for women. What about the men? Ah, it's not worth selling. They're so little. They buy shoes. A woman can have 30 different shoes for this dress, that dress. All right. Outside of Yomo, we all understand that. A wedding, they have to dress, have to look in gold and silver, a color, etc. I have a wedding coming up, and I hear the women, my wife is a grandmother, but I hear the parents and the bride's sisters and sister, and everyone involved is talking a color. All right, but they pass in red. Interesting, because this will come up in a few minutes. All right, and the Marik goes on, and he says, as long as it's universal, this is what's crucially important, as long as it's universal, it is permitted. And he gives an example, for instance, doctors. lawyers. Imagine you're in England, you have to wear the barrister, the lawyer, the wig. Oh my gosh, what goes on? And they take it very seriously. It's not a small matter. It's like a chassid. He's not going to take off his shtreimel, not going to take off his bekesha. He's not going to take off his yarmulke, even if the yarmulke, they have different yarmulkes. I once saw a gera chassid in a store buying a yarmulke, and he wanted to be sure it pops up, that you felt the gera chassid. It's like have a little gaz to keep the top of the yarmulke popped up a little. And he wanted to be sure. He asked me, he said, Matim le chassid me migur. And I told him, Ani lo baki bezavos. He said, really beseda? Okay. And so he says that if it's universal, and this I heard from the Rav, and this Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg says the same thing. And all right, the clothes, if it's universal, we're all sitting here in class today, none of us are wearing Jewish clothing. Right or wrong, there's nothing Jewish about this, nothing Goyish. It's universal clothing, all right? It's not ghetto clothing. In other words, you have to understand the Hasidic world and the yeshiva world today, at least the right-wing part of the yeshiva world, the so-called Haredi part of the black hat, whatever euphemism you want to use, they wear special clothes in the sense of a portable ghetto. I have a copyright on those two words, but it says it all. In other words, black, white, but it's universal clothes, but they don't change style. They don't, I told you, I was driving behind the whole group from Yeshivat Hebron. They were going to a funeral I don't remember whose funeral, but a tremendous crowd, and from the back you couldn't tell anyone apart. Everyone was dressed the same way, all right? That never was. When I learned in Volozhin, when I learned in Mir, when I learned in Panovich in Europe, when I learned in Tells, when I learned in Slabodka, when I learned in Lakewood in America, that never was. Everyone dressed differently. Everyone was unique. Then the Chassidic world showed strength and rebirth, and the Litvisha world copied them on that level 100%. But this is the halacha, this is the psak, and everyone agrees with the Maharik, all the achronim that you quote, everyone agrees. And then when he gets involved here discussing it, and what do you mean Gayisha clothes? What do you mean Pritzot? And he tells a story about Rabbi Yitzchak Ochanan. You'll find it on page Resh Tet Zayin. Jack, you got it in front of you. The second, first column, the second paragraph. A magnificent story. And what's the story? And he's quoting from a pamphlet that was published. The Kovitz Torah. He tells you the Torah Mitzion, Shanahei, Choveret Bet, and they tell a story of a very wealthy individual in Kovnan. Not all Jews in Europe were impoverished. We have the feeling Jews in Europe impoverished. Who knows how poor they were. There were some Jews that made it big. And this Jew's son is getting married, and he made Maseh Bigdei Chatuna Livno Vechema Shemeshi Adon Yikarim Ma'od. Elliot, do you hear this? That the Beta Masut, silk, red, worth a fortune. I don't know. The last suit I bought, my nephews in America got it via the internet. I think, I don't know what I paid, but I don't think it was more than $100, the last suit I bought. And I wear it only in a Sadeh condition, and even then I have to take off the jacket afterwards. In Israel, it's unheard of to walk around with a jacket, a suit, a tie. I look like a guy. So this suit, beautiful red silk, and evidently this wealthy individual was a frum Jew, and someone showed him the marik with the red, what we just quote it to you. It's in the Ramah. The Ramah brings it down. And he went to Rabbi Yisrael Chanan, and he asked Rabbi Yisrael Chanan, can my son wear it? And Rabbi Yisrael Chanan paskind lahalacha that everything and these questions has to be judged by the contemporary situation in which you find yourself. And Rabbi Shlomo says it could be at the time of the Ramah, at the time of the Marik, that people wore red, it was a sign of pritsa. I need not tell you in Holland, in Amsterdam, I remember they showed me a whole area, the red light district. All right, that's pritsa, no question about it. But Rabbi Shlomo says, nowadays, he says, there's nothing wrong with it. No one can call this priesthood. He says, "Ein derech akum lubosh begadim adumim dafka." It's not something unique. These are wealthy people buy silk. Whatever the silk was a red color. And if the chatan wants to wear it, he paskin gezunt dechet, the chatan can wear it. And this is a psak from Rabbi Yitzchok Chanan. And Rabbi Menashe Klein says, I can quote him word by word, he says, when you ask me a question like this, there's no black and white psak. It depends upon, I'm quoting now from the top of the page, it depends upon makom, zman, kavanah, kavanat Yisrael, kavanat akum, yesh makom shasur, yesh makom shematoah, and yesh makom shemutal yechad vasur l'shemi. What does he mean by that? I think I understand. For Borough Park Hasidic Yid to dress like Rakefet, it's a very bad sign. Because it's the sign he's already on the slippery slope. I mean, let's be honest. For Rakefet to dress the way he dresses, that's the way I dressed when I learned in Lakewood, that's the way I dressed when I spoke and learned with Maria Rabbi Rav Soloveitchik, that's the way I dressed when I sat in front of Shmuel Lezavok, that's the way I dressed when I spoke with Rabbi Henoch Fishman, Rabbi Geshen Yankelevich, with Nerech Bornstein, with Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik. What do you want out of me? All right, I never grew up. People are mad at me. I don't have a beard. I say to them, look, it's very simple. I never grew up. I'm still a kid. The rub is sitting here. That's all I can tell you. Oh, I never grew up. It's good to have a beard. All right. I can't. You don't know what I suffered. It's 9 days. I don't shave it. It's just, I don't know. They tell me, I don't know. It's just psychological. I always thought a beard is an adam gadol, a tzaddik. You know, Rabbi David Lifshitz has a beard. Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen has a beard. Where do I come to a beard? All right, now I suffer because Rabbi Baruch Lichtenstein is not here. When Rabbi Baruch Lichtenstein Zeich Tzaddik Lebracha, when he walked in, no one bothered me a lack of a beard. It was a sign of covet. Of what can I tell you? But Rabbi Menashe Klein, very insightful. Don't ask me such a question. I can't give you a black and white answer. It depends where, how. And then he goes on to quote, and you could do a whole dissertation on this. He quotes Reb Shlomo Kluge, and Reb Shlomo Kluge, and you had to remember, this was the time of Shlomo Kluge, was the 19th century, was also one of the greatest poskim imaginable. And you're dealing at a time where modern clothes is starting to come in, it's starting to conquer the universal world, and it's starting to conquer the Jewish world. And again, you're getting involved, enlightenment, how far can you go, what can you accept, what can't you accept? These are the challenges we live with until today. There are no black and white answers. So Reb Shlomo Kluge says, it all depends on your intention. If you're putting on the clothes to look like a guy, to act like a guy, to be like a guy, it's forbidden. But if it's the new universal style of clothing, but you're a good Jew, so we can't aser it. And ain't it motlehem elimishim moda, that styles are changing. And here, Menashe Klein is very smart. The Macy's and Lorton Taylor's and Bloomingdale's, if they all exist, I don't know what goes on today, but all these major stores, German Jewish ownership, right or wrong, 200 years ago, 100 years ago, Bamberger's, it was all Jewish German merchants who conquered America, Klein's, oh wow, Gimbel's, one after another. So he says, a lot of their styles are not, it's not a bad intention, it's to be a show-off. And boy, did he hit the nail on the head. How many movies do we have where two fancy women spent a fortune on clothes and they come to the big event and both of them are dressed in the same Parisian dress? And boy, how many takes do you have? What happens? Is it World War III? Does one walk out with tears? Does one walk out in anger, or do they laugh and realize they both were fools to spend so much money on the latest Parisian fashion, where they're the only two, yes, they have unique two people, three people in the world, and the two of them wind up at the same affair. But he uses the word shachatz, it's the modern Hebrew word, shachatzanut, a show-off. I don't know a better word in English, shachatzanut, shachatz. And he says, it's not uniquely Jewish, it's just moda, the mold, the latest style. And then, very interesting, go into the second column, the third paragraph, and he says the truth of the matter is that we only need one piece of dress that's different. Once you're different on one star, on one level, there's no longer a shaila. You're not a guy, you're a Jew. You're a Jew. Now what do you mean, one piece that's different? He doesn't explain it. I say as follows, if you're wearing a kippah, that itself, you're wearing tzitzit. A lady is covering her head. Her sleeves, here, there's a story, so I read this in one of the Israeli newspapers recently, that this Israeli guy, a frum guy, grew up in New York, came in Aliyah, living here many years, and right before Corona, he went back, visited America, visited relatives, and he was overwhelmed by how frum Brooklyn became and Borough Park, and he grew up in Manhattan, and he was overwhelmed, Flatbush, and he strikes up a conversation with this lady, very friendly, and the lady, he's talking with her, and she knows everything, and then she says, by the way, I'm not Jewish, I'm Italian. So he said, wow, he says, yeah, I know, you probably saw the way I'm dressed. You thought I'm Jewish. He says, I dress this way not to offend my Hasidic, and she pronounced it right, my Hasidic neighbors. And he took that, he said, look how far it's gone, the integration. But you see that if a woman dresses a certain way, he took for granted. And by the way, Italians look Jewish, you know, so there's the other side of the coin. That I grew up in an Italian, Jewish, Irish neighborhood. You can tell who the Irish were. The Italians, if you sometimes had a big question mark, say, Zayin Yidden, Nish Yidden, and they spoke Yiddish. This was another thing. Meir LaGuardia, whose mother was Jewish and father wasn't, and was really, al pi halacha, was totally Jewish, but raised as a Catholic, he spoke perfect Yiddish. The Rabbanim, when the Rabbanim used to meet with him, he used to say, Mitem kemen redden mamalosh, and it's Eina from Unzara, he's one of us. All right, he's not one of us, he didn't practice Judaism, but technically he was a Jew. Technically he was a Jew, his father was a guy, but they look Jewish. But this is so insightful that if you have one item called Netis, then I'll bring you a proof. The proof is interesting. He says, all of us, even the most Hasidic Jews, where do we buy shoes? going to regular stores. No one has a Jewish foot, a Jewish type of shoe. I saw an interview also with these new shoes they came out with. They're not shoes, they're made out of, it's plastic, I think. What are they called? They have a name for them.
Crocs.
So one lady was interviewed and says, the greatest invention to help Judaism, Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, the Crocs. Oh, is she boasting about them? And Reb Nachman says, underwear. Did anyone ever come up with Jewish underwear? By the way, in Israel you have the underwear with tzitzit. You can get the underwear with tzitzit. That they have here. The army gives it out. If you request it in the army, you get it chinam in kesef. Army clothes, they give you with two pairs with tzitzit. They're unbelievable. But he says, does anyone, he says, bathrobes. He says, did anyone ever come out with a Jewish bathrobe? This is the one I'm quoting him. And he says, but all right, we wear it. I'm adding, we do one thing that's different, be it a kippah, be it tzitzit. With this makes us Jewish, a woman that sneered, the head covering, you can tell in a minute. Very fascinating. But there's one problem that really bothers him. And here we touched upon it before. He touches upon it again. And here the ladies have it over the men. What do we do? The left goes over the right. The right is supposed to go over the left. Goyim, the left goes over the right. Jews, the right. Yad Hashem, Yamin, how important it is. And here he quotes Hasidic Sefer, Tzarich Legabe Yamin al Smol, Hefach Mayakum, for who go deim babanotenu lekamaraot ularichat hagalut, sheh, אנחנו מה שמוסיפים כוח לשמאל ומגברים על הימין ומאוד ראוי להיזהר בזה. Wow, here he hits us over the head that this shirt, it should be just the opposite. Everything, and he says, he's quoting here, that we give the small strength and we're marich the galut. And here I have to say that this I remember vividly, 1953. Mori, by the way, it was very difficult for me. I have no connection to my past now. With the death of Reb Moshe David Tendler, it's the last person who was a factor in the yeshiva when I entered in 1951. There's a famous picture from 53. It hangs in my office of all the Rosh Yeshiva administrators. He was the last one left alive. And I saw Rabbi Yosef Weiss. I remember when he died, I didn't know in the middle of class, the message came in to Charlie Hexter from the Kehillah, because Rabbi Weiss is married to Rav Hirsch's great-granddaughter, the daughter of the president of the Kehillah, Dr. Muller's daughter. And I mentioned in class that he was my last Rebbe alive. And Charlie knew already he was dead, but he didn't interrupt me till left the class, he told me. So I remember Rob Weiss, and I told you this, showed me that he has his jacket made to order, his suits made to order, to have the right on top of the left. Okay? Ad kedei kach. Now I imagine the Hasidic Bekishes, they're all that close, I imagine they make the right on top of the left. Anyone here know Yomo? You davening get... Yomo, all right, Yomo's out of it, Salazan Gizun. He davened in Kalin Stalin on Shabbos morning in Beitar, so it'd be interesting to know if the clothes there, it's made to order.
Yeah,
my kittel, that's right, a kittel I know, I just wore a kittel, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and there I said to myself, oh, the kittel is taka made properly. So I can't answer why we're mizalzel. He here says Kabbalistic reasons. But all right, Kabbalah doesn't necessarily affect our daily practice. I'll put it that way. But fascinating. Now, he also deals with why our jackets are round, and we are not makpid that it should be at a right angle. And here he gives a very simple reason that the choshesh, if it's a right angle, you may be chayiv and sits it. Depends how big the slit is in back. You follow? It depends the jacket, the coat, its configuration. Chayiv and sits it. Now I have to tell you, Balei Tshuva, and I've seen this at the Kotel, it's called Jerusalem Syndrome. You all know what I'm talking about. It brings out in people, you know, it can bring out good, it can bring out bad. We've had some, the years I'm living here, I'll never forget, there once was an attack on the Har Bayit, but Balei Tshuva wanted to redeem it, etc. We've had bad and good, and I think that attack was even a non-Jew, I think it was a non-Jew from Australia, if I recall. You can correct me if I'm wrong, it's many years ago. And so I saw at the Kotel, they're wearing what they thought Avraham Avinu wore. They wore like white, and it's and sits it on the clothes. And you know, it's not a bad idea. Could you imagine, instead of the tzitzit that we wear, or some of us wear, I just had an experience, I was doing a bone density, and when the technician, the lady, a frum lady, a haircut, so I took off my shirt, she saw the tzitzit, she got so excited, like, I don't know, I walked out with the feeling I was like a red tzaddik, that I had tzitzit under my shirt. But imagine if we talk of wore shirts and jackets and windbreakers that are higher than tzitzit, that would be fabulous. And I think one day it will be. I think ultimately, as we come home and we become Israelis and Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, Torah Yisrael, we'll get there. We'll get there yet. And that would solve all halachic problems, because once the tzitzit show like that on the clothes, there's no shaila in the world that we don't have to worry about chukotehem, lo pelechu, etc. Yes, Rabbi Wida.
Friend in Chicago, he had a summer shirt and he custom made it with the slits, with the sitzes, because it cuts down having different layers.
Right. And that's why I wear tzitzit like this. And people laugh at me. They find already chumras. I said, all I know is that they brought tzitzit like this into yeshivas. Yes. In yeshivas Yisrael Chan in the early 60s. Sold a million pairs, all the rebbeim were there, no one said boo. All right, I have grandchildren who wear only, you know, with the real beged, wool, exactly. They say it's a better kiyum. I don't, it's not a kiyum, the oraita without chelet, say that, all right. But this way I've never been scratched, it doesn't heavy, it doesn't create sweat. So Baruch Hashem. But that lady got so excited, I'm wearing tzitzit. I walked out happy and depressed. Happy that she thinks I'm a tzaddik, and depressed that here she's stealing Yerushalayim. I'm willing to bet the majority of the male patients that lie down that bone density have put on tefillin that morning and are wearing a kippah. And yet the tzitzit is lacking. But very fascinating tshuva. He touches upon so many different concepts, and you see that halacha lemaisa, we cannot asa, we cannot declare this is goyish. It has to be measured in context of who you are, where you're living, what is your background, what are the surroundings. And he ends off the tshuva. He says, sounds like Rakefa. He's quoting the Gemara in Bracha, Taf Mem Dalet, Amid Aleph Mem Dalet, Amid Bet, it continues on top. Go and see what the people are doing. Ukigon ze chas v'chalila lahotzi laz al kadoshei amenu. And chas v'chalila, don't belittle, don't deprecate, don't depreciate the Jews that you're living among. And he says, "V'gam b'dorot shalafaneinu," even in the wonderful generations before Hitler, "Hayu kama b'dinot shalchu b'mabushim k'seirim," there were many countries already where they were wearing the new style, the short clothes it's called in Hebrew, the modern clothes. And Yilu Hayas Isabadava Hayutzlichim Lamashkenav Shenu Badam Vidaibasa. And if something was if something was wrong, we should have yelled and shouted and cried and rebuked them, and we didn't do it. And that shows that was a generation of Gedolei Yisrael, and if they didn't rebuke and reprimand, it shows it cannot be wrong, it cannot be forbidden, it cannot be prohibited. Okay, this is the tshuva we did so far. Two things, I want to hit something else, but let me review what we didn't share. We're not finished yet, but very important topic. How are we Jews in a big world around us? And that's what it amounts to. And the question with the get and Rabbeinu Tam and the Sefer Yasha, it reveals a world to us. It's depressing, but encouraging. Depressing in the sense, who could believe among the Rishonim, among Gedolei Balei Tosfot, they had so many acquaintances and even relatives who became Catholics. You don't know who you're related from today. They were Secretary of States, as you know, with the biggest Jewish yichus and total non-Jews enmity towards Israel, not understanding who we are, what we are, where we're at. But we ended that off very powerfully with the Ramban and Parshat Bo, the Chatam Sofer and his Drashot, etc. The question of clothes, it's a question that's come up many times. If you recall last term, we dealt with it from Reb Meisher as well, Reb Meisher, Reb Menashe Klein. But there seems to be acquiescence that if it's not specifically Goyish, and there you would have a Shaila, the Arabs with their kafir. I remember we raised that Shaila with the Rav in the mid-50s, and he said it could be, that's forbidden, because it's uniquely Islamic. On the other hand, does it have any religious connotation? I don't know. That I throw open. You can advise me. My nephew, Dr. Zev Rothkopf, I'm sure, will know the answer to that. But if it doesn't have religious connotation, then it may be more permissible. Why do they wear it? The heat, the cold, etc. Okay. But the question with clothing and the red, see, that's... it, very fascinating. The Marik and the Ramah Asa Halacha Lamaisa. And take a look, Rabbi Yisrael Chanan Spekta, I'd love to see that suit. Could you imagine if it's still around, someone comes up with it, it's a museum piece. A wealthy Jew in Kovna had the suit made specially for the wedding. Now, next week is a very, very important shiur. I'm going to give you, come back to this topic and throw open some very fascinating sources. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat HaNotein Le'Yov Koach, we pick up exactly where we left off last week. And I called Libby Kahana. My wife said you should call Libby. Tell her, you know, you're lecturing on Meir. She should have a little Stolzkeit, a little, you know, she's had a very hard life. I need not tell you. Being married to Meir in itself is being married to a volcano. And never to bury a son and a daughter-in-law. And then her daughter, my dear student, Sippy, died of natural causes. Must be 2 years ago already or more. She's had a hard life, so all right, at least I hope the word goes out that not like the Israelis jump on Meir as if he was the essence of evil. He had certain viewpoints that we don't agree with, but the man had a lot of good to him and a lot of great accomplishments that live on until today. Now, I want to come back to Yontif Sheni. Rabbi Grinstein wrote to me, he was upset, I was very upset. The Prime Minister comes back, his whole entourage, and no one has said boo, as far as I understand. I didn't see anything in the Haredi press. I didn't see anything in the Tzioni Dati press. The whole Yontif Sheni disappeared. Where do you get a heter? The halacha in America, even if you don't paskin like the Rav, the Rav felt you had to observe Yontif Sheni. It has nothing to do, you know my lectures on it, nothing to do with where your mind is, it's where your feet are, like Purim. But even if you don't paskin that way, but for Hesia, you don't knock out Yontif Sheni, and you can't say he was an area where there were no Jews. The whole world saw him walking to shul on Shabbos, etc., walking to shul on Yontif, etc. I don't understand it, unless you make a case that his being back in Israel was sakonet nefashit, that the Prime Minister has to be here, so much is going on. Could be, but that's the Prime Minister. What about the whole entourage with the reporters? Then again, Shimon Peres, Rabbi Grinstein sent me a whole article, I remember it. Peres was stuck in America for a three-day chag. He couldn't come back. The Rabbanim said, absolutely not. They yelled, they shouted. And Shimon Peres, who didn't exactly put on tefillin every day, he was the president at the time, I believe. He remained in America. All right, it could be you could have havchana between a distinction between a president and a prime minister. But I have to tell you, the issue hangs fire. And if anyone would have consulted me, I would have said the Simchas Torah, if you want to get rid of Yontif, go to Brooklyn and go to the 770 Eastern Parkway and see what's going on. And the truth is that every year when the Rebbe was alive, a whole delegation would go from the consul in New York. They said, we can travel, it's on a subway, there are no Jews there, it's among Goyim. And they went to Eastern Parkway to be part, and Chabad publicized it, no one criticized them, etc. But I want to say something. On the other side of the fence, I have never in my life dreamt that Yiddishkeit would reach a level like this, that no one knows what Yiddishkeit is about anymore. This is the Yeshiva and Seminary Guide, the latest issue, right? You've seen it, you haven't seen it, they're giving it out. It's for all the kids here in the programs, and I couldn't believe it. This is Haredi. This is not the YU light. This is YU to the right and beyond. Page 111. It's talking about Yom Tovim in Israel. Yontif Sheni. Many families who keep 2 days make their second day meal a little later and make the meal take longer. That way they won't have to go out and see Israelis doing malacha. My dear friends, I have never seen such stupidity in my life. They should go out. They should see the Israelis doing malacha. And they should feel guilty that they're still living alat matnecha, worshipping idols, an open gemara at the end of Ketuvot. Where are we? What are we talking about? Not to see the Israelis. Oh my gosh, I tell you, don't show me Yeshiva Seminary. It's not good for my health. And here I got a good true story to tell you. 1969, Ani Olech Hadash Ba'aretz. I'm working a few blocks from here, Rehov HaMeiri, Encyclopedia Judaica, staff editor. And I'm proud of what I did. We did a great thing. And a young lady whose father was on the committee that gave me my doctorate, worked there, everyone, you only spoke English there, the whole project, English. Rivka Duka, later marries, becomes Rivka Fishman, she's a very bright young lady. And she says to me, Rabbi Rothkopf, I want to ask you a question. I say, please. My aunt is coming, some relative thing with her aunt. I even remember the hotel she was staying in. What should she do, Yontif Sheni? So I told her, I said, Rivka, you know, if she's not going to be living here, she shouldn't do malacha. I mean, she was a learned lady, Rivka, Bachlokes HaPoiskim, etc., etc. But daven like an Israeli, but not to do malacha, certainly not a malacha d'oraita. Well, fine, I paskin what I paskin. After Sukkot, I say to Rivka, what happened with your aunt? She tells me, well, I'll tell you the truth. She said to me, she came out of the hotel and saw all the Israelis getting on the buses and driving and life as usual. What kind of yontif is it? She said, no, I'm like every other good Jew here. And she got on the bus as well. So a very interesting story. Halacha l'maisa, it's not for now to give a whole shiur, but I can understand her aunt as well, just the opposite. Okay, so we've accomplished what we wanted. We let off steam on what we wanted. Does anyone want the latest issue of Hamayan? Does anyone want the latest talk that this is Rav Asher Weiss, the latest shiur, it's on Pashat Bereshit. He deals with the whole Shiloh of Dener at Havdalah, Kedako B'Kodesh, Molei B'Kodesh. If anyone has roots from the Bronx, anybody here roots, this is about the old shoes in the Bronx with memoirs. This was recorded maybe 20 years ago. It's very, very fascinating for me. It's overwhelming because I know many of these people. And right here, this is the shul. I davened in the shul I was bar mitzvah in, the shul that my yufrif was, the shul that Rav David Lifshitz would come and speak. It looks nice. I can't get over it. And today, of course, it's a church. Very, very fascinating. And here is a picture of the Rav with the actor Ed Asna. I showed this before, sitting together, recording a message in support of Maimonides, for the Maimonides dinner. If anyone wants, hashtiyah.anonais. Are there any questions from the wonderful gentleman sitting in front of me? And I want to welcome Rabbi Mark Wiener, who has turned back the clock and has brought me back to the year 1975.
76, 77.
Yeah, bring me back 1 second. The Kollel began 76, 77, 78. 78, 79 was the first formal Kollel program. But you were in the very first class, 76, 77.
Pilot class.
Yeah, Mark, what did you want to ask?
Talk about clothing. It's kind of, I remember once in Chicago, Sunday, where there were two friends. One was dressed like a chassid, one was wearing jeans. So I said, who's wearing Jewish clothes? And he took the guy in the jeans.
Strauss.
He got jeans, he got the ribbons. The tailor, his partner, Jacob Davis, or originally Yafis from Latvia. Right. So it was invented by a Jew.
So it turns out the Jewish clothes is the jeans, and the Hasidic clothes is from Polish lords. Now, Yomo, is it open to the world? Yomo, can they speak? Can the people?
Okay, Aaron?
Yeah, Yitzchak, go ahead.
Okay. Every time you see a picture of Samson Matthew Hirsch, he's wearing the Protestant clerical.
Right.
And in England, it was also the practice of our modern Orthodox rabbis in the United Synagogue. They used to do that.
Right, Judith, right. Right, so Judith Bleich wrote a whole essay on that, I believe in tradition. Check it out. But I think the thinking behind it was this is universal clergy clothes. Got it? Not anything to do with Christianity per se.
Uniform.
But it was a uniform, like a doctor. But Yitzhak, I agree with you. It turned me off. I always was troubled by that. And in America, too, the clergy wore, even some of the Orthodox rabbanim, particularly those of German origins 100-plus years ago. But all right, today it's a little different. But I think that's what they felt. It was like a medical doctor's clothes.
Right, so he's like a chaplain in the American Army. He wears a uniform with his rank, and on the lapel, he has the tablets.
Tablets.
Right.
The tablets. So it's like, you know, siman of that he's Jewish.
Right. I agree. Okay, anyone else with a question? We have anyone else? Okay, so I want to thank everyone for participating, and Be'ezrat Hashem, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, we pick up exactly where we left off, Besorah Tova, Yeshut V'Nechamot, and coming back to Idul Nudel, Das V'Danya. Thank you.